come in front. So we welcome all devotees for today's lecture on the first canto. Chapter entitled The Pandavas Retire Timely.
Yasya kshana vyogena loko hi apriya darshana uktein rahito yasya mrutakah prochate yatha. This chapter deals with Arjuna's lamentation. Arjuna is the closest friend of Krishna, and Arjuna has just returned from Dwarka, and Yudhishthira Maharaj is asking Arjuna, why are you looking so morose? And Arjuna is beginning to answer. The first reply which Arjuna gave we discussed last week. Arjuna mentioned that, my dear King Yudhishthir, as far as I am concerned, I am finished.
Vanchitoham Maharaja Harina Bandhurupina. Krishna was my closest friend.
Harina Bandhurupina. He was my well-wisher. But now I am without his personal association.
Vanchitoham Maharaja, by his own free will, Krishna has decided to return back to his spiritual abode.
Yename apahritam tejo deva vismapanam mahat.
And now, because Krishna has returned back, he has taken with him all the powers which the devotees were having. Krishna was using his devotees for fulfilling his plan. And now, since Krishna has fulfilled practically all of the plans, the powers which astounded even the biggest demigods are no longer with me. Krishna has withdrawn those powers from me, my dear King. Therefore, yena me apahritam tejo. That prowess, that power, that effulgence for which I was famous as the greatest warrior of all time, I have lost it. Why? Because Krishna does not feel that it is necessary for me as far as spiritual advancement is concerned. Now the only thing remaining for me is to go back to the spiritual world, and Krishna feels that this is not required. Now in the next verse, Arjuna is mentioning the kind of feelings of separation a devotee feels when Krishna is no longer present. He gives the example.
Yasya kshana vyogena loko hi apriya darshana.
My dear King Yudhishthir, I was so attached to Krishna.
Yasya kshana vyogena.
The attraction towards Krishna was so intense that even 1 second of separation from him is unbearable.
Loko hi apriya darshana.
Without Krishna's presence, I do not see anything palatable in this entire creation. There are so many objects of sense gratification available, easily at my disposal, but apriya darshana. I do not like to see them. I do not like to enjoy them. I am not concerned with any of it because Krishna is no longer present.
Yasya kshana vyogena.
The attraction towards Krishna was so intense that Arjuna is unable to bear separation even for 1 second. And he is giving the example.
Ukte narahito hyesha mrutako prochate yatha.
He gives the example. All of the universes which are floating in the causal ocean, having emanated from the skin pores of Mahavishnu, all of the wealth and opulence in all of these universes are null and void as far as I am concerned, just as a body without soul. As long as the soul is within the body has some value. All of us are living a few years in this flapping piece of flesh because of the presence of the soul. Once the soul leaves this body, then this body is nothing but a lump of flesh. The body assumes importance because the soul is present. Similarly, Arjuna is saying that these universes were important. Although there were so many Brahmas, some with four heads, some with eight heads, some with hundreds and thousands of heads, and each universe in its own way had its variegated supply of sense objects. But since Krishna is not present, as far as I am concerned, even the most opulent situation in any of these universes is void, is completely filled with depression. I cannot be satisfied here. I am feeling just like life has left my body. Mritako prochyate yatha. So Arjuna is experiencing this intense pang of separation because he is a genuine devotee of Krishna. It is described in the 10th canto when Shukadeva Goswami Maharaj was describing the Brahma Vimohan Leela to Maharaj Parikshit. After the entire pastime was over, Brahmaji had offered prayers and he had also gone back to the spiritual abode, gone back to his abode in the Brahmaloka. Maharaj Parikshit had a question. He asked Shukadeva Goswami, "My dear sage, I am unable to understand one point. In the course of narrating this Brahma Vimohan Leela, you mentioned that for one full year, all of these cowherd boys and the calves, although they were not their real sons, still the mothers and the fathers and the cows were intensely attached to their young ones. In fact, they were experiencing feelings of love which was greater than the attachment they had for their own siblings. How is this possible? Because as far as my knowledge goes," Parikshit Maharaj says, "the thing which a person is most attached to is his own self. Therefore, how it is possible for all of these mothers to love someone else's son, because Krishna, although he had appeared as their son, still it was not their own son. How could they have an attachment greater for Krishna than the attachment they had for their own sons?" And Shukadeva Goswami Maharaj was very happy with this question and he said, "My dear Parikshit, every person in this world has various kinds of attachments. Our attachments can be classified in various degrees. The maximum attachment a person has is for his own self first. Now for those who think that they are the bodies, for them, their own body becomes the source of great attachment. There are two concepts, the concept of I and the concept of mine." Shukadeva Goswami reveals a very fundamental principle in this creation, and that is, if you compare the concepts of I and mine, a person is more attached to the concept of I than to the concept of mine. So for someone who thinks, "I am this body," the body and the senses become the source of greatest attachment. And even he may have family members and children and relatives and friends and society and country and so many diverse responsibility attached to this body, but because it comes under the category of mine, that is not a source of so much attachment as the concept of I. For a person who thinks and who has realized, I am not the body, I am the soul, for him, the body becomes something which belongs to the soul. So for him, I am the soul and the body is mine. Therefore, for such a self-realized soul, the source of greatest attachment is the soul, I. And therefore the body becomes secondary. The concept of mine becomes secondary. And therefore, as Krishna reveals in the Bhagavad Gita in various verses, the symptoms of self-realized soul, that he is completely detached. He is equipoised in happiness, distress, pain and pleasure, unaffected during the various tribulations which the body is put through. Why? Because for him, the source of greatest attachment is I, the soul. This is the second category of someone who has realized, I am not the body, I am the soul. But factually speaking, this is a higher platform of realization, because as long as the soul is present within the body, there is consciousness. As soon as the soul leaves the body, there is no consciousness. So we can conclude that consciousness is the symptom of the soul. Consciousness is the symptom of the soul. We are conscious because the soul is present within. But for someone who does not have this knowledge, he thinks, I am this body, and becomes attached to the body and thinks in relation to the body. But real understanding is, there is a soul within which is animating this piece of flesh. So it is described that one time there was a sculptor who was very proud of making the most beautiful statues. Once he decided to manufacture 10 statues exactly resembling his own body. He just made exact replicas of his own body. And he decided to put it up in an exhibition. So he advertised widely, and many people came to see this exhibition. And these 10 statues were put on what platform? They were standing side by side. All the 10 statues were together. And the sculptor was very proud to see that these statues look exactly like me. What a fantastic artist I am. But he was not satisfied with that. He wanted to hear the praise of the spectators or the audience who would come. Those who would come and appreciate. He wanted to test. So what he did was, he also went and stood amongst those 10 statues. So now there were 11 statues. But actually out of that, one was the sculptor. Because the sculptor wanted to fool the people and then later take pleasure in the fact that nobody could make a distinction between the statue and the real person. Thinking like this, he also went and stood in a pose along with the other statues. Now people were coming and they were making fantastic comments. Oh, what beautiful statues! All are looking exactly the same. The artist must be really talented. And the artist was feeling very happy within.
I just see how I am fooling the people. Nobody is able to make out the distinction between the statue and the real person. This is the success of my art. And he was patting himself on the back, thinking like this. Jai Sri Sri Radha Gopinath Ji ki, Tai Gaur Chandra ki, Vidari Gopal ki, Gaur Pimanandi. At that time, unfortunately, the time of his death arrived. And three Yamadutas came looking for this sculptor in that exhibition. Now the Yamadutas had been given this address, that you will find the sculptor here. But they had been told that you will find one sculptor. But they were astounded to find that the sculptor is not around, but there are 11 statues which look exactly like the sculptor, and the sculptor is nowhere to be found. The Yamaduta started discussing. Said, are we at the right address? So other Yamaduta said, yes. Never Yamaraj has made a mistake before. There has to be some problem here. So the third Yamaduta said, don't worry, I have a plan. The sculptor must be somewhere here, but we have to catch him. So this Yamaduta went in front and he started saying, what a horrible statue. These are the most nonsensical piece of statues I have ever seen in my life. This is bogus. The sculptor who has made this doesn't know what to do. And then the Yamadutas observed that out of the 11 statues, one of the statues, the eyes became red and there was a frown on the face. So the Yamaduta continued. Second Yamaduta said, no, my friend, what are you saying? I have never seen such beautiful statues. In fact, these are the best piece of architecture and sculpture I have ever seen in my life. And they observed that out of the 11 statues, there was no reaction in 10 statues, but one statue smiled. And the Yamaduta also smiled. Got you. Got him. Because only one who is conscious can react and respond. Without consciousness, the body is simply dead. Therefore, the real I is the soul. And hence, Shukdev Goswami Maharaj is explaining, one who realizes that I am the soul becomes attached to the soul. And the body becomes secondary. But then there is a higher level. And the higher level is one who realizes that the soul is existing because it is part and parcel of a super soul, of a supreme person, Krishna. As Krishna says, Mamai Vamsho Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. Therefore, Krishna, the super soul, is the soul for the soul. And therefore, a person who is a devotee becomes attached to Krishna, because the soul is existing because it is expansions of Krishna. And hence, Krishna becomes life and soul for the soul. And that is the third level of understanding. And this is the highest level. And hence Shukadeva Goswami is explaining, because the Brajavasis had realized this, Brajavasis were living on this platform that Krishna is the life and soul. Hence, when Krishna appeared as their sons, as their calves, the cows and the mothers, the gopis, were so intensely attached to their own sons, more than what they were to their original sons who had been stolen by Brahma. And this is the fundamental principle behind every understanding in Krishna conscious philosophy. That the soul is basically part and parcel of Krishna and takes the greatest pleasure in serving Krishna and loving Krishna. And Arjuna is explaining that if Krishna is no longer present, if Krishna has gone back to the spiritual world,
and I no longer have his personal association, then what is the use of this existence? What is the use of simply breathing?
Tarava kimna jivanti bhastra kimna shvasantita na khadanti na mehanti kimgrame pashavopare.
In the second canto, Shukadeva Maharaj explains, do the trees not live? Do the bellows of the blacksmith not breathe? Na khadanti na mehanti. Do the animals not eat or pass semen? Many times we ask people, how's life? How are you doing? Say, life is going on. We are living. Jee rahe hain. But what is the big difference between even trees and human beings?
Taravah kim na jeevanti.
Do the trees not live? Shukadeva Goswami is asking. And there are trees, some trees in California which have been living for thousands of years. And people are struggling hard to prolong life. But who can compete with those trees? And in fact, who gets the body of a tree? A soul which has performed greatly abominable sinful activities gets the body of a tree. One who has misused his independence so much that the laws of karma force him, you stand at one place and don't create trouble. That gets the body of a tree. And people travel from all over the world to go and take darshan of trees in California, redwood trees, who have been standing for thousands of years, so you can imagine what kind of activities such a soul must have performed. So trees are also living.
Bhastra kimna shvasantyuta.
And the bellows of the blacksmith are also breathing. We are also breathing. But what is the difference? A human being has the capacity to understand and love Krishna.
Na khadanti na mehanti kim grame pashavo pare.
We have to rise above the animalistic concept. And therefore, Arjuna is explaining that as far as I am concerned, as far as life is concerned, real life is Krishna consciousness. Real life is to be in the loving service of Krishna. And that we have to realize in our life. Nothing is as important in our life as reviving our Krishna consciousness, because the soul can only experience real pleasure in Krishna's service. No other activity related to the mind, body or the senses can give us any real lasting pleasure. All the other contact with the sense objects will simply be a source of great pain and misery. Every materialistic person in this world leaves his body a miserable, frustrated, depressed man. Real intelligence is to learn from the Shastras, understand from others' experience, and not to commit such a mistake. The real friend is Krishna, Harina, Bandhu Rupina. Arjuna has realized this fact. Arjuna had the personal association of Krishna, and we have a chance to realize Krishna's loving association through his sound vibration, through Harikatha, through his holy name, through Kirtan, through his service. We have the same opportunity which Arjuna had. Therefore, we have to learn this fact, that unless the soul engages in Krishna's loving service, the soul cannot be satisfied. It is impossible. And that is exactly the reason why this entire material world has been created. The world has been created so that the souls are given a chance to revive their dormant Krishna consciousness. One time, a very beautiful looking lady came to Prabhupada and asked Prabhupada, Swamiji, you are saying that that Lord is all good. Your Krishna is all good. If Krishna is all good, why is this world so bad? Prabhupada said, see my dear lady, your face is so beautiful, but why is your stool so bad? That means, Krishna is creating this world, there is a purpose. You cannot judge using your own intelligence. What is Krishna's purpose in creating this material world? To purify the rebellious tendency of the soul. Because the false ego is so strong, we have become entangled. And therefore, Krishna puts us through situations in life where we are forced to become humble. The false ego is so powerful that although the soul is one by 10,000 the tip of a hair, each person is convinced that he is the center of the universe. The sun is rising by his own free will. All the stars are moving because of his desire. This is the influence of false ego. Therefore, Krishna has created this world to smash us, to crush us, to ultimately powder our ego to such an extent that we are forced to take shelter of Krishna. And hence, Arjuna, who has realized this in the association of Krishna, is lamenting the absence of Krishna. Therefore, we have to follow in the footsteps of Arjuna and keep Krishna in the center of our lives. Arjuna was given the choice to choose Krishna's army, Krishna's opulence, Krishna's energies. But Arjuna gave preference to Krishna over Krishna's energies. There are two classes of devotees. One is called the Shakta and the other is called the Bhakta. Shakta is one who worships Krishna's energy and Bhakta is one who worships Krishna personally. Arjuna did not have anything to do with Krishna's armies. Arjuna wanted Krishna, the person. Similarly, a devotee should also aspire for loving service to Krishna. And now, having lamented Krishna's disappearance in these two verses, Arjuna will now go back and reflect upon the wonderful mercy he had received from Krishna. Arjuna is a genuine devotee because he is grateful. A devotee is always grateful. A devotee is one who always remembers what Krishna has done for him. Remembrance leads to gratefulness and forgetfulness leads to ungratefulness. A devotee always remembers the long list of favors which Krishna has done for him and therefore he always is humble. A devotee always remains humble and grateful for Krishna's mercy. And although Arjuna had been a great success materially, Arjuna was the number one warrior in the entire planet Earth. He had defeated all the greatest kings. But still Arjuna is very humble. Arjuna, with folded hands, is revealing to Yudhishthira Maharaj that, my dear king, it is not my power. It was all by Krishna's mercy that it was possible. And Arjuna is revealing in the coming few following verses, one by one, the various incidents for which Arjuna is being glorified and will be glorified for the rest of eternity. But Arjuna is revealing here with utter humility, don't give credit to me. It was not my power. It was Krishna's mercy. It was all due to Krishna, not due to me. A materialistic person is always eager to accept all credit for himself. In fact, so many conflicts and so many anxieties in this world are because of this kind of psychology. Just recently, I was reading that everywhere there is a great craze about man of the millennium. In various fields. So some person was given the sportsman of the millennium. And then someone else comes up and says, this is bogus. I am the sportsman of the millennium. I should be given. And this is my record. And he is claiming to everyone that such a great injustice has been done to him. This is common. People in this world, in the conditioned state, being infatuated by the ego, want all credit for themselves. Under the influence of false ego, we want everyone to recognize us, what we have done. And we are extremely miserly in giving credit to the Lord. Here, Arjuna, the greatest warrior of all time, is revealing that he is not just one warrior. He has such a magnanimous heart. He has the real genuine heart of a devotee. And he is explaining.
Yat samshaya drupadagehamu pangatanam ragyam swayamvaramukhe smaradur madanam tejohutam khalumaya bihitaschatitsa sajjihrtena danushadi gata cha krishna.
My dear Yudhishthira Maharaj, when the swayamvar at the house of Drupada took place, hundreds and thousands of most powerful Kshatriya warriors had assembled there, and each was intensely eager to accept the hand of Draupadi. But then, it was only by Krishna's mercy and his desire and will that I could get the hand of Draupadi. It was not my sharp shooting abilities which were responsible. Arjuna is mentioning this. Arjuna is explaining this very clearly. And this is to the credit of Arjuna, because usually people are very eager to take credit for themselves. Once they win, they want the whole world to explain and exclaim that yes, you are the cause. That's like there was this heavyweight boxer, Muhammad Ali. And in his heyday, he had a slogan, "I am the greatest. I float like a butterfly and sting like a bee." Muhammad Ali, the black Superman. He would have people singing this, like kirtan, whenever he would go. And everyone would glorify him. And he was so powerful that he was really convinced he is the greatest, till he got Parkinson's disease. Then after that, he lost control over all of his motor movements. He could not even walk properly. He needed help to cross the road. And one time he was invited for the opening ceremony of some Olympic Games. And there is this system that some flame is brought and you have to light up the flame. And so some runner brought a torch, and he was asked to light up the flame. He could not even hold the torch properly with his hand. His hand was shaking, so he needed help from others. So some others came and helped him light this flame. And the games were declared open, but then so many reporters were watching this. And next day there was a press interview. And one reporter asked, "Mr. Ali, at one time you had this slogan, 'I am the greatest.' And after seeing the events today, seeing the kind of help you needed to light up a flame, we just want to ask you, do you still think you are the greatest? You want to revise your statement as an afterthought?" And Ali said, "I am still the greatest, but I am the greatest fool, because I thought that I was greater than the laws of God." Because he had become a devout Muslim, at least he got this understanding that no one can be greater than God. And he was honest, he was frank, he realized this, and he admitted this. That is to his credit. Arjuna is revealing here to Yudhishthira Maharaj that, "My dear Yudhishthira, you remember the time when we were at Ekachakra. We had just killed Bakasur, and at that time a certain Brahmana came to the house where the Pandavas were staying. and he was revealing the various places he had visited. And as the Pandavas were hearing intently, this Brahmana revealed that there is a kingdom of Drupada where a great Swayamvar is going to take place. Anyone who wins this will get the daughter of Drupada, Draupadi, as his wife. So the Pandavas were very eager to know, what is this all about? So they asked this Brahmana, could you tell me the secret behind Draupadi's birth? Who is she? So this Brahmana revealed that King Drupada had been insulted by Drona and he was visiting various Brahmanas, asking them to perform a yajna to produce a son who could kill Drona. But any Brahmana, when they heard the purpose for which the yajna was to be performed, they said, no, we don't want to be involved in Brahmahatya. So ultimately Drupada, he came to the hermitage of two brothers. They were great sages. Their name was Yaja and Upayaja. And Drupada approached Upayaja and said, that I will give you 10,000 gold coins, just perform this yajna by which I can produce a son who will ultimately kill Dronacharya. And Upayaja said, I do not desire anything of this material world, but if you want, you approach my brother Yaja, because I think his mind is still contaminated. Drupada asked, why do you think Yaja's mind is contaminated? And Upayaja said, one day we were walking through the forest and suddenly from the top of a tree a fruit fell down. Yaja picked up the fruit from the ground without washing it and without offering it to the Lord, he ate it. And because of this, I am sure there must be a subtle contamination in the mind. You can imagine the kind of purity which was existing in previous ages. One fruit falls down and without washing and without offering, someone eats it. The kind of contamination it can create. So you can imagine in Kali Yuga how much the mind must be contaminated. As he had revealed, he approached Yaja and said, my dear Yaja, will you perform this yajna for me? Yaja said, yes, why not? And he became ready. And he performed this yajna, and from this yajna, an effulgent looking son was born. He had a splendid armor. He was radiating such effulgence that everyone's eyes was being blinded. And this son was named Drishtadyumna. Drishta means one who was born from the yajna, and Dyumna means one who has been born with armor on his body. Drupada also wanted a daughter who could marry Arjuna, because Arjuna was the person who had managed to tie up Drupada for Dronacharya. So a daughter was produced, and she was the most beautiful amongst all. Draupadi, the daughter of Drupada, was dark complexion, and she had beautiful lotus-like eyes, and she had nails which were copper-colored. And she appeared so beautiful that the beauty of all of the apsaras in the heavenly planets was defeated. And Drupada wanted Draupadi to marry Arjuna. And therefore, he had advertised such a championship that only Arjuna could win. And the condition was, any Kshatriya king had to come to the amphitheater which had been specially built for this occasion, and a huge bow which had been specially built, which was so stiff that only Arjuna could string that bow. And you had to come, string the bow and release the arrow. And you are not supposed to see the fish directly. There was a fish which was attached to the ceiling of the amphitheater, and there was a revolving wheel below it. and you had to look right into the reflection in a pool of water below, and then shoot the arrow through the revolving wheel and pierce the fish's eye, and all with that huge bow. This was the condition. And when the Pandavas heard this, and they heard the beauty of Draupadi, they were a little agitated, and Kunti saw this, and they agreed to proceed towards the kingdom of Panchal. And they went there, and they were staying in a potter's house. Because they were all dressed up as Brahmanas, Srila Vyasadeva also approached them and said that you should go and win Draupadi. That will bring all auspiciousness for you. So under the instructions of Srila Vyasadeva, these five Pandavas came there. And they were dressed as Brahmanas. They had shaved up their heads. Nobody could recognize them. And they came right in the midst of the assembly, where hundreds and thousands of kings from the entire planet were present to win the hand of Draupadi. So in the Vedic system, various kinds of marriages were allowed. For the Kshatriyas, there was a lot of concession as far as marriage was concerned. And one was the Swayamvar system, where the girl herself chooses a husband depending on the kind of prowess which he shows. Another system was the Rakshasa style, where a Kshatriya king comes and forcibly captures the girl and runs away, like Krishna kidnapped Rukmini. That was also bona fide. But all of these various systems of marriage are not for Kali Yuga, because in Kali Yuga there are no bona fide Kshatriyas. Many times people approach us and say, I will eat meat because I am Kshatriya. Okay, if you are eating meat, you also try to hold a sword in your hand and fight with the sword. The kind of swords which Arjuna and Bhim were using, the greatest, most powerful man on this earth cannot even lift it. And that is how this gun came into existence. Because people found that this sword was so heavy that as Kali Yuga progressed, the power of the Kshatriyas came down immensely. And they started getting hand aches and back aches and all kind of aches because of this. And it was becoming too cumbersome. So one brilliant fellow decided, we should have something which will create maximum effect with minimum effort. And that was the motivation for creating a bullet and a gun. But actually speaking, from previous ages point of view, this is cowardly, because a Kshatriya will never attack hidden or when it is dark. He will always want his foe to come in the front. Therefore, bona fide Kshatriyas of previous yugas, they could indulge in these kinds of marriages, but not now. In fact, the opposite is happening. Many times the boys' party demands so much of dowry that I've heard about this actual cases in some states, that the girls' party, they pay some money to some gundas, and these gundas go and kidnap the boy, and then the marriage is performed forcibly, and then it is revealed to the boy's side, marriage is over. So what dowry you want? It is finished. Because the gundas, they ask for less money than what the boys' party asks. So it's a cheaper proposition. The opposite of what used to happen in previous yugas. Therefore in Kali Yuga, all these kind of things are not recommended. This is only a specific instance where Drupada had created this entire system so that Arjuna only could be victorious. So it is described that so many kings had come there, and Dhrishtadyumna informed all of the kings that, my dear kings, I am very happy to welcome you here, but you should know the condition that only one who pierces the fish's eye will get the hand of my sister. And then Dhrishtadyumna started introducing all these kings to Draupadi. He said, my dear Draupadi, in this assembly of kings, there are great, very powerful Kshatriyas. First of all, there is Duryodhan and his 100 brothers. There is Shakuni and his brothers. There is a most powerful Maharaja. Shalya, Ashwatthama, Susharman, Jarasandha, the king of Kalinga, Paundraka, Bhagadatta, Somasena, Virata and his sons, Krishna, Balram, Satyaki, Kritavarma, Akrura, and hundreds and thousands of Maharathis and Atirathis. It was like a star-studded assembly of Kshatriyas, who were all expert in using weapons. And in the midst was Yudhishthir, Bhim, Arjun, Nakul and Sahadev in the dress, in the garb of... So at that time, all of the kings saw Draupadi. And many of the kings, simply by seeing the beauty of Draupadi, fainted. There was no question of their getting up and going. They were so overwhelmed with lust that they could not even walk. Some of them tried to get up, but they staggered and fell down. Others went up to the bow, picked up the bow, but the bow was so heavy that they were crushed by the bow, and others had to help them out. And ultimately, Duryodhan was the first person who could actually string the bow. And everyone was looking with bated breath. Duryodhan, he shot the arrow, but he missed. Duryodhan missed. And he felt very disappointed. He came back and sat down. Then the next person who went was Shalya. He was also able to string the bow. He shot the arrow, but he missed the target by the width of a bean seed. Just this much. And there was a gasp from all the Kshatriyas because they thought he has won it. Said, no, missed by the width of a bean seed. After Shalya went Shishupal. He also shot the arrow, but he missed by the width of a sesame seed. And then Jarasandha went, the most powerful of all kings, the king of Magadha. He shot the arrow and he just missed the target by the width of a mustard seed. And then Karna came. And when Karna came and he strung the bow, the Pandavas thought, Draupadi is won. And at that time, as Karna took careful aim and he was about to shoot the arrow, Draupadi shouted, I shall not marry the son of a Suta. And Karna said, okay, I don't want. Put it down and went away. And that anger was still in his heart, which would come out later. At that time, all of the kings had tried. Nobody was remaining. And at that time, Arjuna got up. In the meantime, Krishna had just nudged Balram and said, Balramji, just see those five people, those brahmanas, you can see, very stately looking royal brahmanas, they are actually the Pandavas. And Balramji said, oh, they have not been killed in the house of Varnavat. That is very good. So Arjuna got up. Arjuna was just looking like a brahmana. And he got up and said, my dear Drishtadyumna, I have a question to ask. Are brahmanas allowed to fight and take part in this contest? And the Kshatriyas were thinking, what is this? What can the Brahmanas do? And Drishtadyumna said, well, why not? Since all the Kshatriyas have failed, anyone will be allowed. If you want, you can come here and try your luck. And Arjuna gave a contemptuous look, gazed at the whole assembly of kings who had failed, and he marched like a lion in the midst of all of them. Arjuna picked up the bow effortlessly, strung it in one swift action, took careful aim, and remembered Krishna within the core of his heart. That is the test of Arjuna's devotion. What was at stake? The most beautiful woman in the entire creation. Even when faced with such a prospect, when a normal person would be bewildered, his intelligence
might be overcome by lusty desires. When a person is overcome by the mode of passion, he forgets everything about Krishna. But although Arjuna knew that as a result of this, I am going to get Draupadi as my wife, he was able to perfectly meditate upon Krishna, concentrate upon Him within the heart, and pray to Him, "My dear Lord, in Your service I am doing this." That is a devotee. That is the meaning of devotional service. Bhagavad Gita is repeatedly hammering this point. Where is your mind, sir? You may be engaged in so many devotional activities, but where is the mind? Krishna is not concerned with how your hands move, how your tongue moves, how your various parts of the body and senses go. Where is the mind? While doing the service, are you conscious of the object of your service? If yes, that is devotional service. And our progress in bhakti depends to the extent to which we are able to put Krishna always in the mind while doing service. Arjuna was in the midst of all of these Kshatriya kings who had failed, and Arjuna knew that if he wins this, he is going to get Draupadi. But still, Arjuna's intelligence had not become bewildered, thinking, "Oh, how I will enjoy now." Arjuna was very much conscious. This is in service to the Lord. Therefore, devotional service does not mean giving up everything and going to the forest. Because even if you go to the forest, you may not be always thinking of Krishna. You may be attracted by the other animals. So many people live in the forest. There are so many smugglers, sandalwood smugglers, they live in the forest. The whole LTT is in the forest. But that doesn't mean that they are great transcendentalists. But where is the mind? That is the question. Although Arjuna was in the midst of the most royal, opulent palace, the amphitheater was studded with jewels in all directions. And although Arjuna was about to perform an activity which would give him the association of the most beautiful woman, Arjuna's mind was thinking of Krishna. Therefore, bhakti means, where is your mind? Therefore, Krishna says, man mana, not mantana. Krishna says, where is your mind? Think of me. Therefore, Arjuna, he thought of Krishna within the heart, took careful aim, looked at the reflection of the fish within the water, and then, thinking of Krishna, he released the arrow. And the arrow went flying through the revolving wheel and pierced the eye of the fish, bang on target, and the fish fell down on the ground. And there was a huge roar in all directions. All the Kshatriya kings were stunned. What is going on? A Brahmana has come. And he has released the arrow with such perfect aim. And there was all kinds of bugles and kettle drums blowing in all directions, and the demigods were showering flowers. Another interesting point. Draupadi was so beautiful, and this was supposed to be such an attractive event, that actually all the demigods and demigoddesses from the entire universe had come. Many times people hold contests and they name it Miss Universe and Miss World, etc. But actually it is only within this planet. Nobody else from the other parts of the universe comes. But actually, in this case, denizens from the entire universe had come to witness this event. And when Arjuna won, they were all showering flowers. And Drupada was very happy because he knew within his heart that this Brahmana cannot be an ordinary Brahmana who just chants mantras. He has to be Arjuna. And Drishtadyumna instructed Draupadi that, "My dear Draupadi, place the garland on this person." And Draupadi went and she placed this garland upon Arjuna's neck. And in the meantime, the Kshatriyas were stunned for some time. Suddenly, they came to realize what had happened and they started shouting,
We have an objection. Drishtadhumna. This has been a deliberate attempt on your part to insult the Brahmanas, to insult the Kshatriyas. Because as far as we remember, Brahmanas are never allowed to participate in Swayambars. How did you allow him to participate? This they never questioned before. Because they thought he could never do it. But now, after the whole event was over, they were bringing up points of objection. And then how could you allow him to participate in this? You wanted to insult us deliberately. Therefore you have done like this. But how can we display our anger against this Brahmana? Because Kshatriya is supposed to protect the Brahmana. Therefore what we will do is, we will not attack this Brahmana, we will attack Drupada, who has created this trouble. So all of the Kshatriyas, Karna, Duryodhan, Jarasan, everyone went towards Drupada to attack him. And Drupada was bewildered. He had not anticipated this. He had thought that everyone will be grateful for inviting them. Immediately Drupada went and took shelter of Arjuna. Said, Arjuna, you protect me. And immediately, at that time he didn't know of course that it was Arjuna. He had a doubt. So he just took shelter of this warrior. So Arjuna immediately took up his weapons and told Drupada, you don't worry, I will take care of all of them. In the meantime, the other four Brahmanas who were standing quietly at the corner, they also joined the action. One of them was specially very tall and very hefty looking and powerful. He lifted a huge tree. Because his measurement was only in terms of trees and mountains and boulders. So he lifted a tree and was standing there. And people were wondering, really, very powerful looking Brahmanas. And all of them stood and Arjuna said, Bhima, don't bother. This is easy for me. I will take care of them. And Arjuna started attacking Karna. In fact, Karna was so furious, he attacked Arjuna with full speed, thinking that this is a Brahmana. Even Karna was stunned to see such a ferocious counter-attack. He had never had a fight with a Brahmana like this before. And Karna also resisted after some time, thinking that, I may kill a Brahmana, I may injure a Brahmana. So Karna also retreated. In the meantime, Bhimsen, he took up Shalya and threw him very mildly at a distance, so as not to injure him. He did not want to prolong the fight. And Shalya got the message and he ran away. In this way, slowly all of the Kshatriyas saw that if we continue this battle with these Brahmanas, it will create some problem. So they all left. And in this way, Draupadi was won by the five Pandavas. Drupada was very happy. He still did not know their identity. And these five Pandavas brought Draupadi home. But Arjuna here is revealing to Yudhishthir Maharaj that, my dear Yudhishthir, although for the rest of eternity people are going to glorify my prowess, my ability to shoot arrows with such precision, I want to reveal to you that it was only by Krishna's mercy that this was possible. Because Krishna wanted me to marry Draupadi. Krishna is Rishikesh, master of all senses. The expertise with which we use our senses is not our own power. It is only by Krishna's will that this becomes possible. Therefore, Arjuna is revealing his state of mind. He is giving all credit to Krishna. Yudhishthira Maharaj, it was Krishna who did this. It was Krishna's desire. It was not my prowess. And therefore I am feeling great lamentation that Krishna was so merciful that he wanted to give me all the glory. But now I no longer have his association. And in this way, Arjuna is explaining, Tejahritam kaluvanaya bhitascha matsya sajjihritena dhanushadhikata cha Krishna. Tejahritam kalunaya. Now that prowess, that kind of shooting abilities which I had, I cannot display any longer, because it was Krishna who had given this to me. And now Krishna has withdrawn it away from me. Therefore, Arjuna in each of these verses is revealing how a devotee is completely dependent upon Krishna. A devotee is always dependent upon Krishna because he realizes that he is nothing. I am nothing. Only Krishna wants me to perform such activities, and so he is providing these various facilities. Otherwise, on my own, I cannot do anything. Therefore, it is described in the 11th canto. Shrinvan subhadrani rathangapane janmani karmani chayani loke gitani namani tadarthakani gayan vilajjo vicharet asanga. A devotee of the Lord is simply conscious of Krishna in every activity, and hence he engages in hearing Krishna katha and chanting his glories. Shrinvan subhadrani rathangapanir. Krishna, who wielded the chariot wheel while protecting his devotee Arjuna, subhadrani, Krishna katha is all auspicious. Gayan vilajjo vicharet asanga. And therefore a devotee who is convinced that Krishna is the cause of all causes, and to love Krishna and to devote oneself completely to Krishna is the goal of life, he travels everywhere singing fearlessly without any embarrassment Krishna's glories. Gayan vilajjo vicharet asanga. Vilajjo means without embarrassment, without feeling any sense of shame. He goes distributing Krishna katha everywhere because he realizes that the only thing which is powerful and worth glorifying is Krishna. He realizes that I am nothing, Krishna is all important, all powerful. Therefore Prabhupada was asked one time by a devotee, that Prabhupada was standing at an airport, and this devotee asked, Prabhupada, when will the day come when we will have our own airport? Prabhupada said, this is our airport. Why? Because everything belongs to Krishna. Wherever you go, whichever place you reside in, that is ultimately being provided by Krishna. So why we should aspire for our own airport? This is our own airport. The whole land is Krishna's. People have artificially made various distinctions. This is India, this is America, this is Russia. So many distinctions. Prabhupada said, this is useless. The whole planet belongs to the Lord. It has to be offered in the Lord's service. That is all. Prabhupada would say that just like dogs at the night are convinced that this area belongs to me. Whenever you pass through a certain street, the dog will be barking at the top of his throat. He'll be shouting so ferociously. And then hearing that, some other dogs will join in. And each of the dogs, they have made their own areas. And they have the typical way of demarcating their areas. But after demarcating that area, they can only get that guts at night when no one is there. In the morning, when the human beings start walking, they give it a kick. And the dogs cannot do anything. And they are just sleeping in a corner. And again at night when nobody is around, they suddenly get that power. And anyone comes, they start barking. And the way they bark, you can see that they are convinced that yes, this is our area. So Prabhupada said, it is like that. Everything belongs to Krishna and has to be offered in the Lord's service. Someone asked Prabhupada, so what do we do about these materialistic people? Prabhupada said, because they don't accept Krishna's supremacy, you should just stamp on their forehead SR. But what is this, Prabhupada? Simply rascal. Because you are not accepting Krishna's supremacy, therefore it is simply rascaldom. A scientist came and he was arguing heavily with Prabhupada. What God? Who has seen God? Everything is from chemicals. And Prabhupada tried to explain for some time.
compassionately, thinking that he is interested. Half an hour he went on blaspheming. And Prabhupada just called his disciple, Brahmanand, come inside. He was 6'5". And Prabhupada said, he can't understand my language, so you please take him out. And this person, he lifted the scientist and took him out as is. As it is, he was lifted out and thrown out. And this scientist, he didn't know what to do, what is happening, I am having a discussion. He said, that is all right. But now, we will take you to higher levels. Threw him out. And Prabhupada said, we can try for some time, but if people are unable to understand, what can be done? You only try to give prasad and try to make them understand. Because a person is so convinced by his false ego that I am the center of everything, they cannot hear Krishna's glories. They cannot humble themselves and hear how Krishna is the cause of all causes. And therefore here we have the excellent example of Arjuna, who is endowed with all kinds of material qualities, who has been the most successful person. Amongst the 5 Pandavas, Arjuna was the most powerful. He was the closest associate of the Lord. And he had achieved everything. But now, at the end of his life, he is revealing to the whole world for all time to come, I had nothing to do with any of these successes. Don't think Arjuna was great. I am not great. Krishna is great. Krishna is the only person who is worth glorifying. And Arjuna will recall each incident, each pastime where he was successful, and then ascribe all the cause of the success to Krishna. This is Arjuna's consciousness. And then we will see in future verses how Arjuna is glorifying Krishna through all of these various pastimes. So next Wednesday, there will be special program starting from next Wednesday going up to Sunday on the occasion of the millennium 29, 30, 31. This verse which Rupa Goswami is mentioning is Anasaktasya Vishayan Yatharam Upayunyate Nirbanda Krishna Sambandhe Yuktam Vairagya Muchyate. So the definition of Yukta Vairagya is, although there are so many objects, sense objects, but the whole idea is the concept of sin has nothing to do with the interaction of the senses with the sense objects. The senses will always interact with the sense objects. Even for a pure devotee, he is seeing, he is hearing, he is tasting, touching. The senses are interacting with the objects. So the senses will interact with the sense objects, but when a person desires to enjoy the sense objects for his own pleasure, that is called sin. That is the root of sin. The propensity to enjoy, that creates sinful karma. Just like there is nothing wrong in using a microphone. Right? Now the microphone can be used for organizing a rock show. It can be used for organizing a mimicry show. It can be used for mundane drama. It can be used for so many things simply for titillating our senses. But we are using the same microphone for what purpose? In Krishna's service. So, sense gratification by definition means gratifying one's own senses independent of Krishna. And what is mentioned in this purport as a translation to Rupa Goswami's verse is how to satisfy Krishna's senses. How to satisfy Krishna's senses. So, using this microphone, when we are giving lecture, glorifying Krishna, What we are doing is, we are satisfying Krishna's senses. Why? Because Krishna has given an order. Always think of me, always remember me, and glorify my holy name and activities. And because we want to serve Krishna in this capacity, by glorifying his activities, we are using this microphone in that service, so that all of you can hear Krishna Katha much better. So what is the service? For pleasing Krishna. Right? If the same microphone we are using, and we are charging tickets, and we say that some famous film actor will come, and he'll be giving darshan, and he'll be speaking to you. Of course, the crowd will be 100 times more. But then, the same microphone, if you take it to the midst of a rock show, the microphone is same. But then what is different? The purpose for which it is used. So matter is inert. It is neutral. Depends on how you use it. Just like a knife is neutral. Right? Would you like anyone attacking your father with a knife? Would you like? No. But if your father has appendix and some operation has to be performed, you approach whom? A surgeon. What does he have in his hand? Knife. And you are paying him. Please, cut open my father's stomach. Take this money. Please do it. Please. So the knife is neutral. But the purpose for which it is used, that makes the difference. The knife, when in the hand of a criminal, he will use it to threaten people and take money. But the same knife, or a knife, an instrument which cuts open people's body, when in the hand of a skilled surgeon, can be used to save people's lives. So a microphone in the hands of an entertainer who jumps and dances like a monkey creates hellish situation for the souls who are involved. Whereas the same microphone, the same amplifier, the same speakers, when used for propagating Krishna Katha, liberates the listener and the speaker. This entangles you from the knots of karma. Similarly, Krishna was using Arjuna as an instrument. That is exactly the reason why Arjuna was used as an instrument by Krishna, and the venue was the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Because the concept of renunciation is the most misunderstood. Whenever you use the term renunciation, the thing which comes in people's mind is first saffron color. When you say renunciation, saffron, or shaved head, sannyasi, who has left everything, renunciation. Different words have different images associated with it. So whenever the term renunciation is used, this is the first image which hits a person. That is bogus. That is what Krishna was trying to tell Arjuna. Because Arjuna was arguing in these terms that, Krishna, I will go to the forest and become a beggar. And Krishna said, you are fool number one. Just shut up and hear as I speak these verses of the Gita and then decide. Therefore, the third chapter is entitled Karma Yoga. The fifth chapter is entitled Karma Yoga, Action in Krishna Consciousness. And both the chapters begin with similar question put forward by Arjuna. How can work and renunciation be compatible? Therefore, the concept of work and renunciation being complementary is a recurring theme in the Bhagavad Gita. In various chapters, this theme is taken up because people do not understand what renunciation means. Krishna told Arjuna, you can be as renounced using the bow and the arrow. Just like for a Brahmana, the yajna he is performing, he is using the ghee and he is using the sacrificial fire. Similarly, my dear Arjuna, as far as you are concerned, your arrow is the ladle with which you pour the ghee. The sacrificial arena, the sacrificial fire is the battle of Kurukshetra. And the offerings are the blood of all of these soldiers. This is as good as a yajna for my pleasure. Instead of offering flowers to the deity, my dear Arjuna, you offer these arrows for my pleasure. So Arjuna is bewildered. And that is why he is asking. That on one hand you are saying that you should develop knowledge. On the other hand you are saying that you should fight. How it is possible? How it is possible? Nishreyasau karau ubhau. Geya sa nitya sanyasi yona dveshti na kangshati. Nirdvandvo hi mahabaho sukam bandhat pramuchyate. So Krishna defines who is a sannyasi. Who is a sannyasi? Yona dveshti na kangshati. One who neither desires nor laments. Neither hankers nor laments. He is sannyasi. Nirdvandvo hi mahabaho. In this consciousness, you can become free from all duality. Sukam bandhat pramuchyate. Therefore, Prabhupada was using every possible facility in Krishna's service. Someone argued with Prabhupada, why are you opening so many temples? Big, elaborate, huge temples with marble and chandeliers and everything. Why are you using so much of marble in your temples? Prabhupada said, as far as I am concerned, I can sit under this tree and speak Bhagavatam. Whether it is raining, or it is sunshine, heat or cold, I can sit and speak. But will you come? No. So initially, you will come only when there is proper building, proper facility. And if you create a beautiful building, things in Kali Yuga are so gross that people are attracted by magnificent buildings. And these temples are for glorifying Krishna. Mundane people like governors and prime ministers and presidents, they live in so much of opulence in such exquisite buildings. The supreme personality of Godhead, the husband of the goddess of fortune, he does not deserve a marble temple. This is the least you can do. Just for one day's security, the amount of money which is spent on the Prime Minister or the President, you can build several temples. And he is just a mundane man, 1/10,000th of tip of a hair, who can't even control his nature's call. And the Supreme Lord, the cause of all causes, from whom everything is coming, how much more he deserves. Therefore Prabhupada said, this fellow was arguing, he was saying that there are already so many broken down temples and which are not being managed properly, so ISKCON should take it over. Why you want to create new temples? So Prabhupada looked at some children playing and he said, you see these children? He said, yes. So Prabhupada asked this person, you are married? He said, yes. Why you are married? He said, I want to produce children. So Prabhupada said, there are so many children playing. Just pick up any one of them and be happy. So no, I want my own children. Prabhupada said, similarly, I want my own temple. Not just take up any broken down temple with so many strings attached. Anyone gives any donation means you will have so many strings attached. You take this property, but you should not get up before this time. And you should not remain awake after this time. And so many conditions will be there. Should do deity worship like this, like that. Said, no, we will have our own temples. But for what purpose? In these temples, you can see so much of opulence. You go to Radharas Bihari temple, practically most of it is made of marble. But why? For what purpose? For Krishna's pleasure. The six Goswamis of Vrindavan, they made the most magnificent temples. Radha Govind, Radha Gopinath, all of these temples, Radha Raman, fantastic temples. For what purpose? For Krishna's pleasure. Because everything belongs to him. Therefore, we are using everything in His service. Therefore, what is wrong? You are understanding the point? So, sense gratification means using something for one's own pleasure. But when a person knows that whatever is coming and going is all in Krishna's account, he is detached. That is what Krishna told Arjuna. You just fight as an instrument. When a doctor performs an operation, the operation blade is just an instrument. When the operation is successful, the credit goes to whom? The blade or the doctor? Who gets the payment? The doctor. Right? No one comes in and tells the doctor, "Very good blade you used." The pharmaceutical company or some company which manufactures the blade doesn't come and take credit. So many successful operations performed because of our blade. It is never a deciding factor in selecting where the operation should be performed. In this hospital they use these blades. In that hospital they use these blades. So where should we perform the operation? These blades or that blades? No. In this hospital, this doctor. In this hospital, that doctor. So the doctor is the main person who performs and conducts the operation. All success belongs to him. Similarly, Krishna told Arjuna, "My dear Arjuna, this battlefield of Kurukshetra is like an operation theater. And the patient is human society, which is sick, infected with the pus and the pores in the form of Duryodhan and his brothers. They are just like an infectious wound. And I am the surgeon. And I need an instrument to perform this operation on this patient and remove the pus and the infection. And you become my operating blade, dear Arjuna." And operating blades don't protest. "I won't perform this operation." Operating blades, they simply dance according to the desires of the surgeon. Therefore, why are you protesting? Just fight. Tasmat yuddhasya Bharata. Just fight. Why you are lamenting? Krishna told Arjuna very clearly that you give up. Mai sarvani karmani sanyasya adhyatma chetasa nina ashir nirmamo bhutva yuddhasya vigata jvara. Give up all lethargy. Give up all kinds of laziness with respect to attachment to the body and fight. Mai sarvani karmani, offering all your works to me. Sanyasya adhyatma chetasa, in spiritual consciousness. Nirashir, not expecting anything for oneself. Nirmamo, without feelings of I-ness or mine. Without giving up all kinds of egoistic conceptions. Yuddhasva, fight. Come on, shoot arrows. I want to see the blood of all of these Kauravas. It is not that I can't kill demons. I have killed enough, even when I was in the lap of my mother. But I want you to become an instrument now. It was not that Krishna had grown old and he wanted to retire and he could no longer fight, so he was using Arjuna. Krishna did not have that problem, but he wanted Arjuna to become an instrument. And therefore, he is using Arjuna as an instrument to show us that if Arjuna could be Krishna conscious on the battlefield by killing and murdering people, why can't we be Krishna consciousness dealing with money, with power, with so many managerial responsibilities? That is not as ghastly as being on a battlefield where there are cries and shouts of animals and human beings who are dying on the battlefield. Blood all around, rivers of blood flowing, with so many hands and limbs floating like islands. In such a scenario, would we be able to think of Krishna? Therefore, we are not Arjuna, and neither we are put in that situation as Arjuna. Arjuna is being tested severely to set an example that be detached. Real renunciation means you work by giving up your false ego. One may renounce his dress, one may renounce his hair, but the last piece of renunciation is renunciation of the false ego. One devotee came and told Prabhupada, "Prabhupada, now I have joined the temple, I have given up everything." Prabhupada said, "What did you have to give up? What did you have? Did you have anything? What will you give up? Only when you have something you can give up." Right? If you just say, "I give up the post of Prime Minister of India," who has made you the Prime Minister? "I give up millions of dollars which may come to me in the future." You don't have anything. Such renunciation is bogus. First you must have something and then you can renounce. So a conditioned soul has nothing, only his ego. And Krishna is aspiring for that. Give up your ego and surrender to Krishna. Just like, and work like a man who is working in a bank. Suppose there is a bank employee and he is just collecting so much of money. People come and deposit so much of money, right? So one day, 10 lakh rupees, people come and deposit throughout the day. Does he go home and tell his wife, "Today we earned 10 lakh, let's buy a flat"? The wife will say, "Who gave you 10 lakhs?" "No, not to me, but there were deposits in the bank." But that doesn't make it our money, it is the bank's money. Or the next day someone withdraws 10 lakhs, he doesn't come and say, "Oh, gone, we are finished, we are doomed." No, he is blissful. Said, "You want to deposit? Come, deposit. You want to withdraw? Please take, no problem." They don't try to convince you, "Hey, don't withdraw so much. This is too much. Withdraw a little bit." Why? Because they know, doesn't belong to us. "You want so much? Okay, take it." So detached. Why? Because they know that money is not in their account. The money belongs to the bank. "You want to take? Take it. Use it the way you want, no problem. It is not mine, it is yours only." Similarly, a devotee is serving Krishna in this consciousness that whatever comes and whatever goes, nothing is in my account. It is all belonging to Krishna. And therefore, Rupa Goswami is saying here, "Yuktam vairagyam uchyate." You have to use things in Krishna's service. That is all. Nothing belongs to us. So whether it's a vehicle, it's a temple, building, even computers, everything can be used in Krishna's service. Someone asked Prabhupada, "Why are you using jet aeroplanes? You are traveling in jet? You are a jet air Swami? What is this?" And Prabhupada said, "The whole world is going to hell at the speed of jet aeroplane. So if I have to catch up with them, I also have to go in that. Otherwise, if I am going in bullock cart, I can't catch up with them." Right? A traffic policeman has to ride at a speed which is higher than the traffic limit. Only then he can catch the offender. The speed limit may be mentioned 80 kilometers per hour. And some offender may be driving at 120 kilometers per hour. And the traffic policeman thinks, no, "I should go at limit speed, 80 kilometers per hour. Will he be able to catch him? For catching him, he has to go at 140 per hour. And then he will go in front of him and catch him. And then the offender can't say, "You were driving at 140. Very nice." He will say, "That is none of your business. I was driving to catch you." Right? That is the purpose. Therefore, some people say, "Swamiji, so much money." One Marwadi gentleman met Prabhupada in Calcutta and he asked Prabhupada, "Swamiji, aapne aisa kaise kiya?" I mean, he was not concerned with how many people became devotees and how many temples he opened, but "Aapne ye sab kaise kiya?" Basically, he wanted that. So Prabhupada said, "Kirtan kiya, Hare Krishna bola, ho gaya sab kuch." Nahin, Swamiji, lekin ye sab kaise kiya? He could not understand. He was using his own intelligence. Prabhupada, "Hum bol rahe hain, hum gaye kirtan kiye. Log aa gaye, Bhagwan bhejte." "Kaise kiya?" "How did you do it?" Otherwise, how can so much? From 40 rupees to 40 crore in 10 years is... Even a normal businessman cannot conceive of this. So Prabhupada had so much of faith in the holy name, and he was using all that money in Krishna's service. Right? So, that is the whole point. It was not that he was breaking the law, but he was going above the speed limit so that with modern technology and using all the things which materialistic people are using to go to hell, he was going at the same speed to catch them and book them and tell them, come on, go in another direction. Otherwise, you can't even send the message across. You have to at least reach to them. Therefore, all these things are required. Otherwise, Prabhupada said, what do I need? We just need... Prabhupada once told one disciple, just see, I'm hardly sleeping, I'm hardly eating, I'm eating once a day a little bit, and mating and defending is out of question, so my service is most profitable to ISKCON. You're not paying me anything, I'm working for free, hardly sleeping 2 hours, and giving so much of service. Just see, you are making me work so much, you are getting so much out of me. So he was working so much, not for his own pleasure, for Krishna's pleasure, for serving the Lord. Therefore, all of these things can be used in Krishna's service. There is nothing wrong with it, and that is the meaning of real renunciation. Right? Meaning of real renunciation is, you may be in a palace, or you may be under a tree. If you are under a tree, don't be attached to the tree. Because the ego is such that you may even become attached to the tree. Say, no, no, I will sleep here only. I get good sleep here, under this tree. You can become attached. You see so many beggars, they become attached to the place where they beg. They won't allow anyone else to come and sit there. Say, no, no, this is my spot. As if they have created that spot. That is called ego. So we have to give up that. As far as living in various situations does not make any difference. So that is the real understanding of renunciation. And Krishna told Arjuna, you fight, giving up your false ego. Why you don't want to fight? Because you are calculating. If I fight, what I will get? If I don't fight, what I will get and what I will lose? So your whole calculation is based on my own profit and loss. Right? Arjuna was calculating. How much profit, how much loss I will get. So give up this profit-loss calculation and work for my pleasure. That is bhakti. Otherwise, this profit-loss calculation, if you continue, that is not devotional service. Therefore, you can still be a devotee on the battlefield if you fight for my pleasure. Therefore, he instructed Arjuna to fight. Sarva dharman parityajya. Mam ekam sharanam vraja. Just accept my shelter. Aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshayishyami. Right? First verse of Gita says, dharma kshetre kurukshetre samaveta yutsava. And last verse says, yatra yogeshwara krishna tatra parth dhanurdhara, yatra shri vijayo bhutir dhruva nitir matir.